Welcome back, my dears. I hope, again, however that time was spent, that it felt connective and that it was a space that you felt you could connect more deeply to yourselves. For the anchor this morning, I want us to play in the realm of watching the mind, which is a continual practice for me. But first, I'm going to invite you to close your eyes and to allow the body to energetically come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert. And this might be that physically you are sitting or that you are lying down. So the posture doesn't matter so much. It's more inviting in this energetic, almost like an energetic welcome to the nobility of these practices. The four noble truths of there's in this realm of being human, there's suffering. There are causes to the suffering. There are ways to end the suffering. And then the Eightfold Path, which points us the way. These are ennobling practices, and they also invite us to clear through sort of the forest of our conditioning and our lives to come back to our true nature of quiet mind, steady heart. Yeah. Tall order, possible in moments. So, allowing yourself to come into the body again, perhaps feeling into the ways in which your body rests upon the earth, feet on the floor, if you're sitting in a chair, on the couch, wherever. Noting what's supporting you. Yeah. In addition to gravity, the earth's holding us, connecting each of us. We are all resting here upon the earth in these bodies of ours. And allowing there to be, I don't know, 50, 60% of your attention to stay in the body. Again, perhaps feeling the sit bones, what they're resting upon. Or the feet on the floor, or how your hands, if they're holding each other, or hands resting on your legs or in your lap. So, some degree of attention that stays in the body, just here in this body. Excuse me. Present time in the body. And then allowing the other percent, 40, 50%, just to watch the thinking mind. And the beautiful oft-given image of the mind is like a blue sky. And then our thoughts are like clouds. Yeah. Sometimes puffy clouds, those beautiful horsetail clouds, sometimes terrifying storm clouds. We know the range. And this invitation to stay in the body, resting in the body like in a comfortable chair. And then we're just watching. Oh, these are the habits. This is where the mind goes unbidden. We're not trying to control it. We're not trying to direct it. We're just noticing. It goes into this worry pattern. It goes into this planning mode or judging mode. Interesting. It may be helpful to have it keep the hand on the heart or heart center, hand on the belly. This is a way of staying in the body, because sometimes our thoughts, whew, they can be so compelling, right? And then pretty soon we're like off on that thought train going nowhere good. Yeah. So allowing again, the hands can help be like, sweetie, just stay here, stay in the body. So that body can relax, body can feel safe. And we're just watching the incredible gymnastics of the thinking mind here and there. Okay, that's interesting. Perseverating, thinking, planning, judging. And we undertake the training to not have to believe our thoughts, or at least be able to make discerning choices about thoughts that are helpful. And thoughts that are not. But in order to do so, we just want to watch. Oh, left alone, this is where the mind goes. Interesting. And sometimes it goes in places we really don't want to go, or we don't want to follow the mind. Okay, so we can come back and let the attention just come back into the hands that are holding us, or feet on the floor. Come back to the body. Yeah, and practicing that movement in the mind into the body. Really helpful. Please remember, there is no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we just notice, oh, it's like this. And sometimes it feels bad and we're all over the place. Sometimes it feels all unified and steady. And guess what? It changes. So again, extending this generous compassion of, oh, it's just like this. The mind is busy. The mind is racing. The mind is steady. Okay. Again, keeping some attention in the body as a way of staying grounded, connected in this fathom-long form of ours. Thank you. So nice to sit. Excuse me. So nice to sit together. As you may have guessed, I want to talk today about this relationship we have with this mind of ours, and the weight, often the weight of the stories that we tell, or the different narratives that we tell ourselves. Some are just we're so habituated to, which is why this exercise of just watching, like, oh, here's where the mind goes. This is where the neural pathway is really well entrenched. Yeah, it goes to worry, or it goes to delight, or it goes here, it goes there. And it can be such a helpful exercise of just watching, oh, okay. And the thought stream can go to a place that just stresses us out, right? And then this pattern happens, or we're in this cycle of the mind goes here, and then the body kind of comes along. And I do wonder which comes first, the body's response and the mind, or they just can work in tandem. And pretty soon we're just off into a place where we're really can be really destabilized or stressed out. Similarly, in the other direction, when we really allow ourselves to kind of corral the mind of like, nope, don't go there, go over here. Which is why the teachings of the metta phrases, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, we played with last week, may I be at ease, is so useful as a way of like, do this, mind, do this, right? Giving presenting an alternative that isn't stressful. And it can take a lot of work. Sometimes these managing our bodies and minds and hearts can take a lot of work. And watching how we phrase it, like, oh my God, I got to do all this stuff to take care of myself. Then it just becomes obligatory and a burden, but it's like, oh my God, I have the information and access to these tools that can really allow me to live in a more easeful way. Some conditions, obviously, we have no say over what's happening a lot of times in our bodies, but it's how we relate to it. How we relate to it comes from how the mind is working. So these ways in which we can keep undertaking the training to watch the mind. Oh, it's like this. Helpful? Okay. How can I kind of reel it back? Yeah. This quote by William Kittredge, we live in stories. What we are is stories. We do things because of what is called character. And our character is formed by the stories we learn to live in. We continually use stories to hold up the mirror to ourselves. And I remember first coming across that poem, or that phrasing, I don't know, like 30 years ago. And at that time, it was before I knew anything about Buddhism. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, we do live in stories. And now I'm like, I agree with that, but we don't have to. Because so often the stories we tell ourselves, or the character we think that we are, isn't accurate. Right, the character we play in the unfolding stage of our lives, what is it? All the world's a stage. So the role that we play, the role that we've slated ourselves, the role that somebody else might have slated for us, we play. Unless we start to really pay attention to, is this the character I want to be? How we're seen by others, and we can be held in place. Well, our family members think we're like this. We go back to our family and we kind of like, get squashed back into that role, right? Some might say, well, we regress into how we were when we were young, or we watch it with our own kids, how they regress when they were young. Okay, but is it regression as one frame? But another way, I think, could be like, well, we kind of morph back into the character we were slotted to be in the role that we play in our family. And these teachings of mindfulness and paying attention to the mind, watching the mind habit, allows us to be a little bit more selective as to what character we want to play, or even to play with that image. Like, what's the costume we want to wear? We may be so habituated to be like, oh, when I'm with this person, I'm in this costume. Why? Is that true? Is that actually, when we sit inside ourselves, aligning ourselves with what we value, our own sense of integrity, is that the costume that we would put on? Maybe, maybe not. So this ability to really watch the mind does this. Okay. The stories we live in are like this. Okay. Are they still true? They might have been true when we were six, or 12 or 15 or 20 or 30 or 40 or whatever. Okay. Do we want them still to be true? Do we want them still to be true? Do they still serve us? And it can be a subtle shift of twitching, you know, shifting a little bit this way or a little bit that way. Or it can be more like, I don't agree with this at all. I remember myself coming up in the sort of teens and 20s, that first period of being reflective of like, what did happen to me when I was young? And this way, the story I had about myself in my family, or the way I felt my family viewed me. I don't know whether they thought that way about me or not, but it was something I took on to be true, which was totally not helpful in any way, shape, or form. And being able to be like, oh, I don't actually need to carry this anymore. That's a story I can put down. David Wyatt has somewhere, I can't remember where it was, I think on some CD I listened to a million years ago, but he talks about this black bag, or a bag that we have. I don't know the color, a bag that we have that we just put stuff in. It's good, bad, stories about ourselves, stories about others, and we kind of just carry it along with us. At what point can we turn around and be like, why am I carrying this big thing that's super heavy and uncomfortable and impeding me from a sense of freedom and lightness? So what that requires, first, sort of turning towards, oh, I'm actually carrying this bag behind me. Oh, what's that feel like? Again, the sense of like, the weight of the stories that we carry about ourselves, about others. There's a weightiness to them. And then the courage to kind of turn to be like, well, what's actually in this bag? And some of it's going to be not very pleasant, and some of it might be. And again, about ourselves, about others, and the way that when we fix other people in a character, we obviously limit that person to a character. Yeah, as we do ourselves, if we limit ourselves to our being a particular character, then we lose the full range. We don't have that for the full set of keys, the range of the piano board, so to speak, to mix up that metaphor. How do we keep allowing ourselves to have greater and greater range to the fullness of our experience, to not be limited by the stories we tell ourselves about our lives and about others? Byron Katie's beautiful lines, which I think absolutely came from Practice of the Dalai Lama, although I do not know that to be true. Sort of looking at our thoughts, like, is this true? Is this really true? How do I know that it's true? And what might it be like if it weren't true? We might play with this later, but these questions about really allowing ourselves to examine the thinking that's going on to decide, do I want to believe this? And where is it leading me? And whether it's sort of the negativity bias or all the ways in which we sort of are scanning for something to be wrong or believing something is wrong. Okay, is that true? And being able to pause there to see kind of what happens. From Rumi, be empty of worry. Think of who created thought. Why do you stay in prison when the door is so wide open? Move outside the tangle of fear thinking. Live in silence, flow down and down into always widening rings of being. Yeah. Think of who created thought. Why do we stay in prison of these, the thinking that can be so limiting or one-dimensionalizing? Actually, the door is wide open. We just have to be able to see the thinking the prison that's created of these thoughts, to be able to see it. Oh, I can step out. I can have the mind go somewhere else, to live in silence, going down and down into ever widening rings of being. That's that freedom that can come. Like, oh, I don't have to be constrained by either the stories I tell myself, stories I was told about myself, you know, what happened in school when we were young, or something our parents or siblings might have said, that can really just, like, a seed gets planted and it just grows and grows and grows, and pretty soon we're in this forest of limiting beliefs or just stories that are no longer true for how we are today and how we want to live. Right? So important to come back to that sense of value, the sense of our own integrity about what really matters. that can help clear that forest, right? To be able to identify what's actually true. From Audre Lorde Coping, it has rained for 5 days running. The world is a round puddle of sunless water, where small islands are only beginning to cope. A young boy in my garden is bailing out water from his flower patch. When I ask him why, he tells me young seeds that have not seen the sun forget and drown easily. Right? So how do we not allow ourselves to forget the sun, to not believe the waters that we may be swimming in, waters that we may have created through thought, both our own thoughts, but also that which may be handed down to us through institutional oppression, racism, through conditioning of families, society, you name it, the different ways we kind of through osmosis pick up stories that may not be accurate or true to how we are. And this practice of being mindful of how the thinking mind moves left unbidden is a way to kind of follow the thread, like, oh, is this useful? Maybe, maybe not. But that ability to have a choice is astonishing and ultimately liberating. That the only thing we have control over is our mind. And sometimes it's like, it doesn't feel that way. So we kind of slow down. Yeah, okay, what's happening? Where does it go? Oh, stop, come back, do this. So whether it's the Vipassana, the Brahma Viharas practices those phrases, hear mind, do this, or think of something beautiful. Yeah, think of someone we love. We redirect, skillful redirection of our minds. Because as Ellen Bass says, bad things are going to happen. Bad things are going to happen. Your tomatoes will grow a fungus and your cat will get run over. Someone will leave the bag with the ice cream melting in the car and throw your blue cashmere sweater in the dryer. Your husband will sleep with a girl your daughter's age, her breasts spilling out of her blouse, or your wife will remember she's a lesbian and leave you for the woman next door. The other cat, the one you never really liked, will contract a disease that requires you to pry open its feverish mouth every 4 hours. Your parents will die. No matter how many vitamins you take, how many Pilates, you'll lose your keys, your hair, and your memory. If your daughter doesn't plug her heart, if your daughter doesn't plug her heart into every live socket she passes, you'll come home to find your son has emptied the refrigerator, dragged it to the curb, and called the used appliance store to pick it up. Drug money. There's a Buddhist story of a woman chased by a tiger. When she comes to a cliff, she sees a sturdy vine and climbs halfway down. But there's also a tiger below and two mice, one white, one black, scurrying out and begin to gnaw at the vine. At this point, she notices a wild strawberry growing from a crevice. She looks up and down at the mice and then eats the strawberry. So here's the view, the breeze, the pulse in your throat. Your wallet will be stolen. You'll get fat, slip on a bathroom tile of a foreign hotel and crack your hip. You'll be lonely. Oh, taste how sweet and tart the red juice is, how the tiny seeds crunch between your teeth. That's all we have. You know, this ability, like, bad things are going to happen. Things are not going to go the way we want. Okay, that's a given. We can kind of be conditioned to believe that that's an error. Like we've done something wrong. Like things didn't work out. No kidding. You know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But releasing any expectation that we may have that things are going to work out. And then, okay, so then what? So where's the strawberry? Where's something beautiful amidst all the chaos of things? And if we aren't able to slow down enough to notice the strawberry or to notice the beautiful flower or the postcard that's on the wall, we miss it, and we miss a chance to kind of regulate our system back, like, oh yeah, there's all this, and then there's this that is beautiful. From Pema Chodron, the book When Things Fall Apart, the essence of life is that it's challenging. Sometimes it is sweet, and sometimes it is bitter. Sometimes your body tenses, and sometimes it relaxes or opens. Sometimes you have a headache, and sometimes you feel 100% healthy. From an awakened perspective, trying to tie up all the loose ends and finally get it together is death, because it involves rejecting a lot of your basic experience. There is something aggressive about this approach to life, trying to flatten out all the rough spots and imperfections into a nice smooth ride. Yeah. And we can really want that smooth ride, and we can fight it when there's not that smooth ride in the mind, and just building in, it's going to be rough, right? Okay. So where are the places of choice? Where does it not need to be as rough? Our external world is going to present enough circumstances of roughness, right? The body will present enough experiences of roughness. So how can we work with the mind to limit that and say, okay, maybe I'm not going to go down this road again of thought. Okay. So it's strengthening our muscle of choice towards liberation. From Osho, there is a music which has no sound. The soul is restless for such silent music. There is a love in which the body is not. The soul longs for such unembodied love. There is truth which has no form. The soul longs for this formless truth outside of the thinking mind, outside of, what's that from Rumi, outside the tangle of right and wrong. There's a field, I'll meet you there. You know, in that field, there's no talking of each other. It's just the space and awareness. Yeah, that's not how the poem goes, but that's the gist. This way of stepping outside the limits of the thinking mind to be able to feel a sense of connection to the natural world, connection to ourselves, to others. Happiness by Hermann Hesse. If luck you chase, you have not grown enough for happiness to stay. Not even if you get your way. If what you lost, you still bemoan and grasp at tasks and dash and dart, you have not known true peace of heart. But if no wishes are your own and you don't try to win the game and Lady Luck is just a name, then tides of life won't reach your breast and all your strife and all your soul will rest. Watching, what do we grasp for or push away? And how does that cause stress? And wanting this, not wanting that. The thinking mind is in charge, pulling us in that direction. Oh, wait, there's grasping. Oh, wait, there's a chasing after luck. There's a chasing after this. There's an aversion to bad luck. Oh, it's a lot of angling around movement in the mind. Okay. Can we slow down enough to notice? Just help. Let's pause there. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And if to lean back into the meditation, if you stayed with that watching of the patterns of the mind or just right now, if you bring your attention and energy back into your own body and just notice where the mind goes and kind of what are those top three tapes that the mind plays? Is it a particular collection of worries or concerns, future-oriented, what's going to happen, da-da-da. I wish this didn't happen, leaning back in the past. Just being curious, where does the mind go? Forward, back, perseverating about something. And again, it's just this gentle curiosity. We're just trying to get the map of the mind, the thinking mind, where these thoughts go. And to maybe pick one of the most common places that the mind goes. I don't have the actual numbers in front of me, but apparently some studies have been done that show these are not the right numbers, but say that there are like 200,000 thoughts in a day that we have, and 80% of them are the same ones. Those are not the real numbers, but it's in the ballpark of how repetitive our thinking can be. So what are the top few most repetitive patterns? To maybe just pick one. Oh, this is a story I tell myself about myself. This is a story I tell about somebody else. This is a worry I have all the time. Is it true? And see what comes. Is it almost like holding this thought pattern up to the light and being able to examine it? Is it true? See what answers come. Yes, no. Is it really true? How do you know that it's true? And lastly, from Bharati, what if it were not true? What if you let it go? This no longer serves, this is no longer true. So if for game, I want to sort of play with this exercise. So from looking at it from the lens of a thought line, a pattern of the mind, a thought habit. And then to consider the more weighty sense of stories. Is there a particular story you carry about yourself? Particular character that you often drop into that does not truly resonate with you, that feels incongruent. Is that story true? Or is that character actually resonate with your truth? Is it really true? Does it resonate today with who and how you want to be, your aspirations? How do you know it's true? Relying upon what other people say, relying upon something you've consistently told yourself. What if it wasn't true? What if you let yourself put that story down, even just for a moment here? Let yourself take that object out of the bag you may be carrying. I don't need this anymore. Put it down. What do you notice? You give yourself permission to no longer hold that story, to no longer imprison yourself in that character. To no longer imprison yourself in those thought patterns that do not serve you. What happens then? When you move outside that tangle of fear thinking, live in silence, flow down and down into always widening rings of being, into ever greater depths of this birthright of yours. To have a steady, clear mind and an open, wise heart. How might it be to live from that place? Just check in. As you imagine this, how does the body respond? How does it feel in the body to allow you to step out from under these stories that don't serve? To put down that bag behind you? And imagine walking in the world from this place to notice how the shoulders are, how your posture is, how your head rests upon the spine, how you might move, and how it feels. So I'm going to stop there, and thank you so much for the kindness of your attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.